chances are to get around, you probably rely heavily on GPS. That stands for Global Positioning System. But how many of us actually know how it really works?
Before the conference, I'll happily admit I had no idea. I was really surprised to find out that GPS was actually created by the US Department of Defense, and it's one of several groups of satellites out there, collectively known as GNSS, or Global Navigation Satellite Systems. Terry Moore is Professor of Satellite Navigation at the University of Nottingham, and he kindly got me up to speed on how having satellites around the world can tell me and my smartphone where I am.
You are positioning yourself with respect to the satellites. Now, there's a general misconception about this, and this is sometimes popularised by the press and films and things, that it's a tracking system, that there's sort of spies in the sky that are watching you all the time. Well, if you think currently at the moment, there are 4 billion receivers in the world, so it clearly doesn't work like that. And so what's happened is signals leave the satellites and are transmitted down, just like a radio signal on the radio or the TV. So they're just transmitted signals, and then your unit in your smartphone or your sat-nav in your car receives those signals. And what we actually do, it's all based on time. So the satellites have very precise clocks, and they transmit coded signals that basically say when the signal left the satellite. And what your receiver does in your smartphone is it times when those signals arrive, and by knowing when it arrived and when it left, we can work out the distance using the speed of light. And so by measuring the distance to all these different satellites, we can just do some geometry and work out where we are.
Right, so I guess it's very important that the clocks are accurate then.
Well, this is one of the really neat tricks, yeah, because if we think about the speed of light, if we go back to that, and we think about something that we use every day, an A4 sheet of paper, light will travel from one end, from one A4 sheet of paper to the other, in 1 nanosecond, 1 billionth of a second. So if we're wanting to position and we're wanting to measure the distance, let's say to a meter, then all this timing I've talked about needs to be synchronized to 3 nanoseconds, 3 billionths of a second. So we've got to have clocks on the satellites, clocks in your phone, which are all going to be synchronized. That sounds impossible. Now, we can get very good synchronization on the satellites because they're using very precise atomic clocks and they're constantly monitored. So we know that they're on a stable time base.
And time, according to Einstein, is relative. So how do you deal with the fact that how time may be moving out in space may not be quite the same as how it's moving here?
Yeah, this is a very important point, and it's designed into the systems. We have to take relativity into account in two ways, because these clocks, we've said, the satellites, are flying along at 4 kilometres a second. And so that has a special relativistic effect, and the time appears slower. But also, the clocks are flying in a different gravitational field, much lower gravitational field than on the surface of the Earth. And so we get a general relativistic correction, and that makes the clocks appear to run faster. And so combine the special relativity and the general relativity together, we would get the wrong time on the clock on the satellite. So what happens is they are actually run at the wrong rate. We seem to have them running at the rate we expect the time to be running, but they are deliberately skewed, so they run at a different rate, so that by the time we see it, we're seeing the correct rate, if that makes sense.
Without going too much into the physics, yeah. In terms of the satellites, how many are up there and how long do they last?
They are designed to have around about, let's say, 7 to 10 years. I mean, it varies from which constellation and which generation of spacecraft, but that sort of age of about 7 to 10 years is a good number to work with. And how many do you need? Well, this depends on how far away the satellites are. Okay, so the satellites we use for GPS and for the European Galileo and the Russian GLONASS systems, they're all about 20,000 kilometres above the Earth in what we call medium Earth orbit. And so how many do you need for that? Well, you need about 24, 27, 30 satellites. And the different constellations have those as their key numbers. Now, GPS at the moment currently has 31 satellites of various generations and various ages, and it's slightly overpopulated because some of the older satellites are getting quite old and they're coming to the end of their lives. So there are newer satellites there just in case the old ones happen to have problems.
I suppose 8 to 10 years doesn't actually seem that long to me when you're actually having to send something into space. I mean, who picks up the bill for this?
Yeah. Yes, it's an expensive business. So it depends where you are in terms of who picks up the bill. If we're talking about GPS, then the US taxpayer has been very generously doing that for us for the last 30-odd years now. So GPS is owned and operated by the United States, and it's operated as a dual-use system for civil and military users, but it's operated by the US Air Force Space Command. So they get the money from the federal budget within the United States, and that's what's paid for the system. And as you say, it is expensive. A satellite launch may cost of the order of $60, $70 million. If you're in Europe, then you and I are paying for it. Our taxes are paying for the Galileo program, which is paid out of the European Commission's budget, or the European Union's budget, and the current bill that we are paying is 900 million euro per year is being spent out of the European budget to pay for the development and deployment of Galileo.
So GPS is already available to us in Europe. Why do we need Galileo?
The European Union is very interested in developing our own system so that we are then building spacecraft. We are building the ground segment. We are building the receiver segment. We're building the location services industries, all based on that. And that's all jobs within Europe. So you can make an argument based on market penetration. You can make arguments in terms of what we call sovereign control. The way that GPS is owned and operated, as I said, by a single state, by the United States of America, and it is there as a military force enhancer, but it is now so critical to so many aspects of our lives in terms of the positioning and navigation, but also timing. If you remember what I said earlier on, when we're solving for the way we use GPS, we solve for time all the time. And that means we have a very precise way of disseminating time around. And that's now used throughout what we call critical infrastructure. So telecommunications, banking, the internet, all digital radio even, are all based on timing provided by GPS and other satellite navigation systems. So, but that's all under the control of another state as a defense tool. So in terms of simple sovereign control of critical infrastructure, we need to have our hands on the system which is giving those critical services.
Professor Terry Moore from Nottingham University. You're with me, Georgia Mills, and with Chris Smith, and we're mapping out the science of navigation. Still to come, how do you find your way through space, and what are the trials and tribulations awaiting the advent of driverless cars?
But first,